Look, the people you are after are the people you depend on. We cook your meals. We haul your trash. We connect your calls. We drive your ambulances. We guard you while you sleep. Do not fuck with us.
This is mostly a protest. The fires have been started.
I read an interesting term for the first time, and it piqued my interest, sort of speak. And I guess it was Philip Klein in National Review, who I like, Phil, coined the term Fight Club conservatism. And in a piece yesterday at the New York Times, David French, at least to how I took it, seemed to say that this is a negative connotation. And this, to me, is just one of these other cases where critics of DeSantis try to assign a label or something to him and only make him sound cooler. It was kind of like when they labeled him Ron DeSatan. Guys, they're just making him sound even more metal. You're going to have to get better at this. But I want to go into this a bit, this piece by David over at the New York Times. It's May 26th. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I noted that I will be off next week from recording. I was going to look at possibly popping in for one last call-in before the end of the month when call-in wraps up their business, which I told was the end of this month. And I got kind of the notice that said I was planning on doing a two-part encore because of the DeSantis thing. And then because I just had a few days left in May, I said, well, I'll do an episode or two still. And I kind of got the notice that if I choose to do an episode tonight, it has to be the last one. So tonight will be the final episode of Versus Media Live on Call-In. And what I can tell you is, if you've ever popped into Call-In, even just as a listener, if you're one of my regulars or what have you, you're going to kind of want to show up tonight. Because I am an agent of chaos. And I have a very chaotic, somewhat, hopefully chaotic thing planned for the final episode of Call-In. Not like any like surprise guests, although there might be, or anything like that. But let's just say I kind of want to inflict the most amount of mass chaos that I can for this final episode of Call-In. And I had a few people ask me where would I continue this if I could. And you know, I know there's Twitter Spaces and a few other things. I would think Substack itself, it might be working on something like this. You would maybe think Hope. If they were smart, they would probably look at doing that. But I think people would have to join Substack as more than a subscriber. I don't know how any of that would work. But speaking of, you know, Fight Club conservatism and in general and operations filled with mass mayhem and chaos, that's kind of at least what I'm intending as a plan tonight for Call-In. So probably about 8 p.m. Eastern, we'll get some shenanigans started. And then, as I said, lock the doors and burn the place down. I have a piece coming to Spectator, I think over the weekend. I have one coming to Examiner, but it's really kind of a niche piece about these protests and Target. And I've said that, you know, if you're going to boycott a company, fine. And if you have a public persona and you want to use that public persona, somebody's like, say, Matt Walsh, to boycott a company, okay, do that. I'm not someone who really partakes in things like that, but it's a valid kind of activist-style tactic. What isn't a valid activist-style tactic, in my opinion, is walking in with a camera and harassing workers. If you want to target a company, pun, that's fine. When you start targeting floor managers, or if you go after Bud Light and then you start targeting delivery drivers, that's how you lose. And that's how you lose very badly. The GOP in recent years, and you can maybe accredit some of this to Trump, is on the verge, I would say, of genuinely becoming a party of workers. And that's largely because, whether you agree with it or not, globalism trade has just decimated a lot of jobs across this country in large-scale manufacturing sectors, etc. And it was that contingent that really swung over to Trump in 2016 in places like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, these manufacturing hubs and what they call the Rust Belt. And since then, you could argue Joe Biden, old Amtrak Joe, comes in and then he wins back those states, but it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like that constituency swung back over to Joe Biden, and especially given what happened with COVID, where, as I said, people lost their businesses. And if they didn't lose them to a government-imposed mandated lockdown, they then lost them to an inflamed rioting mob. And it's been one of the more interesting kind of demographic flips that I've seen since I've kind of paid attention to politics. That was Bill Clinton's entire constituency. George Bush, the elder, was just kind of old and out of touch, supposedly lied on no new taxes or whatever. And Clinton was the, you know, the humble hillbilly of Paleo-Pain. And he basically rode that to the White House. I would argue that was another election where you had a young nominee in his 40s. I think Clinton might have been in his early 50s, somewhere around there, going up against a guy who just looked old, out of touch. He'd been, you know, on our TV screens in front of us for 12 years under Reagan, 8 years under Reagan, obviously, and then four as president, and the country just said, we need a new shot in the arm here. And boy, did you get it. But there was a little bit of that. And so you could be seeing something similar to that, again, in a flipped cycle, where you very well could have a 44, 50-year-old GOP nominee, and that could be one of three or four people. Obviously, you know I'm not referring to three or four people, against an 80-year-old man. And, of course, there are forces aligning all over the place to either philosophically wax why that would be a bad thing, or the, you know, the forlorning for the good old days. And in this one, we have an opinion by David French in the New York Times titled, "Will DeSantis Destroy Conservatism as We Know It?" And I think the headline right off the bat is interesting because he says, as we know it. Well, what is it as we know it? Can anyone really define what it is right now? I don't know. I don't know if I could walk up to 20 people and say, define conservatism, and they would give you an across-the-board answer on what it would be. But I wanted to read a few parts of this and kind of counter them because it kind of, to me, ignores the entire problem. And as we said, for what, going on 8 years, there has been never Trump. I was part of National Review when that came out, against Trump, rather. A lot of that was then spun into professional never Trump, which is people who essentially are paid for their position on being never Trump and the monetization of that position. And of course, being embraced by the people who gave the country Donald Trump. And as I kind of said way back in the day, you're going to learn who these people really are. You're going to learn if they do, in fact, if it's not just about Trump, or if it is just never Republican. And we know, like, once you're never Republican, you're pretty much a Democrat, and your usefulness as it comes to the Morning Joe set or CNN or whatever kind of corporate media contributor gig you have where you can be positioned as the good Republican against all the 99% fringe bad ones, your usefulness dries up and you're just another pretty Democratic face. And you're now seeing this theory tested in real time, that what happens if there is an actual viable option against Donald Trump? How many of these people who've spent the last 4 to 5 years decrying him as a unique threat to the Constitution of the United States, the gravest threat we face since the Civil War is language they use, how many of them will then stand up and join the only real alternative option to stop him in a primary? And what we're seeing is none. They somehow think that Joe Biden's a viable option, but therein lies the problem. You think that Trump is such a unique and grave threat to the Constitution that you believe in getting him to one electoral position that much closer to the Oval Office in assuring that he gets the GOP nomination. Why? Well, some of you think that the Republican Party needs to just be destroyed completely and rebuilt so you can then walk back in the door, the Bill Kristols, the Tom Nichols, Stephen Hayes, those guys can just walk right back in the door and say, now we can finally rebuild this house the way that it used to be. Or the way that we want it. Pick up a hammer, Larry Hogan. Get going. As I've said, that's not going to happen. You're not going to burn a political party down and then think that you're somehow going to be invited back to rebuild it. Doesn't work that way. So instead of putting aside how you make a living, claiming you're the principled conservative, well, you're not. You're a Democrat. If that is your goal, to assure and help Donald Trump win the GOP nomination, only to where you think there's no way this country votes for Trump again, so that's the only way to destroy the GOP and break their hold on Trumpism, is he loses, and then maybe then people will wake up, no, Trump runs again. These people are sometimes pretty stunning in how confident they are about being wrong about everything. So instead of, I don't know, either voting for or throwing your weight behind that option, instead we get pieces like from the triad at the Bulwark, it's not too late for Conservatism, Inc., to dump DeSantis. That's an interesting terminology. Because Conservatism, Inc. is what Michelle Malkin says and used to say. Michelle Malkin, once she started flirting around and getting in the mud with the Grapers, turned on me and referred to me as Conservative Inc., GOP established, GOP Inc. And I'm kind of like, what are you talking about? Michelle Malkin is the very definition of GOP Inc. Corporate GOP, corporate media GOP. I'm the independent band that has nothing to do with any of those people. So it is interesting that here you have J.B. Lass at the Bulwark using the same terminology as Michelle Malkin. I wonder if he even knows that. And that's kind of my point. But you get pieces written like, you can still dump this guy for who, JV? Who? Well, Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney's not walking through that door. She's going to draw 1% because this is a different party. Well, then I'm out of options, throws his arms up, stomps out of the house. It's like, okay, that's fine. But there's a lot of people who think rolling with that other option is the smart bet. I think that there's a lot of things going on, and I'll get to the David French piece here in a minute. I think it's not only a pre and post Donald Trump Republican Party, or even a pre and post George W. Bush Republican Party. It's a pre and post COVID Republican Party. And I don't think they understand that. And I think I've said this on this podcast, and I said so at call-in and live, is people aren't over the ramifications of COVID. Yeah, I mean, it's gone, and I talked about how being in grocery stores and how plexiglass is down now and nobody's social distancing and nobody asks for a vaccine card anymore, so it's kind of gone. But the ramifications of it aren't. And in reading a lot of David's work of late and sharing it and talking with people, I'm kind of stunned at how lazy he's gotten. Everyone has their complaints. Everyone has their complaints about him and his stance on conservatism, and he's at the New York Times, and he was at the Atlantic, and he's selling out, because if the GOP is going to embrace Trump, that's not good enough for me, so I'm going to go embrace the New York Times and CNN and MSNBC. That's always a weird one to me. You didn't have to do that. You can still remain pretty principled and not be embraced by that particular brand of Voldemort. But I think that that's really my biggest complaint, is how lazy he's gotten with some of the, I want to say, anti-GOP slash anti-DeSantis tropes. It's almost like he doesn't understand or has not looked into the issues. And that, you can say a lot about David, but generally being uninformed is not a criticism you hear of him very often. He's not a stupid man. But I do think that there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of wish-casting coming from the former establishment wing of conservative media. You've been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media Podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.